Hey, welcome back to Maryland Morning on 88.1 on this frigid morning. I'm Sheila Cast. If you think it will be safe to venture out of your snowy nest for a movie this weekend, you're tuned to the right spot. Our movie mavens Jed Dietz, director of the Maryland Film Festival, and Anne Hornaday, film critic for The Washington Post, are with us to talk about some of their favorites. Hey, guys.
Hello. Good
morning.
Now, Anne, before we get to specific cases, you're talking to us from the True False Film Festival in Columbia, Missouri. What's the action there?
This is a really terrific, I would call it little, but burgeoning and now big film festival that was started 12 years ago in the heart of the Midwest, in the heart of a Midwest winter, by some enterprising filmmakers. David Wilson is familiar to the people who come to the Maryland Film Festival. He's been a long-standing supporter of the Maryland Film Festival and started this little documentary festival out here, and it's really become a very highly regarded event. This is actually my first year being able to attend. I'm doing a panel tomorrow at the Based on a True Story conference that happens at the nearby University of Missouri campus. So today's the first day. I'm going to dive in and see what's happening, but I'm really thrilled to be here.
Great, great. Let's talk a little bit about how the Oscars played out. I mean, generally, you two made fabulous predictions, except Best Picture.
We both wanted Boyhood, yeah.
You wanted Boyhood. Yep. Now, Tom was quite frank. Tom Hall said he wanted Selma. That was the only reason he was voting for Selma. But I didn't hear you, Jed Dietz, saying you wanted Boyhood. I heard you predicting that Boyhood would get Best Picture. And, of course, it went to Birdman.
You're right. That is, we both predicted it. But also because we wanted it. I mean, I think that fused. I think it's the best movie in that group. And I think it's a very good group. But it was so bold in its making, as was Birdman. But I think in Boyhood's case, the execution was spot on. So that's why I thought
so
it would win.
So you're unrepentant.
And, I like Birdman too, though.
I think, if I remember correctly, when I was making predictions, I did predict Birdman would win Best Picture, but I thought Linklater would at least get Best Director for what the reasons that Jed just said. I just thought no one could argue with what he did and his vision and his the execution of it. I mean, I was just really shocked that the Academy didn't recognize him personally for that. And also, I was disappointed that Sandra Adair, his editor, didn't win for editing, because again, I just don't see how you. I don't see how you argue with that accomplishment, but that's why it's a horse race.
What kind of effects are we seeing from Birdman having won?
Big jump in box office. I mean, I was looking at thinking about the show of what's happened through the years for Oscars, and the box office jump that happens with just nomination, beginning with nomination, has had a huge impact in the last 3 years. Half of the biggest jumps since 1982 happened in the last 3 years for films. American Sniper leading the pack, but Zero Dark Thirty to go back a couple of years. Selma got a big jump out of the nomination. So it's very interesting that the Oscars, and probably the whole award season, but the Oscars are the big kahuna and all that, are having a real impact on audience awareness and box office.
And nominations more than actually taking home the category?
Yeah, that varies. I mean, that can have a tremendous impact, but that varies tremendously over the years.
The movies that really benefited, if my memory serves, from actually winning were Slumdog Millionaire and King's Speech. I think King's Speech, my memory might be spotty, but I think it was just getting ready for its European push, and it just absolutely made a huge difference with that. And again, you know, this is why the awards season has become such an important alternative to the tentpole spectacle comic book business model. It's its own little business model where now people and even studios will make movies that are absolutely geared for these sorts of campaigns, these Oscar campaigns and marketing campaigns that pivot around nominations, which is why, for all of its ridiculousness and self-servingness, the awards season is really a very valuable way to guarantee a future for these movies.
It's interesting, and I was just looking at for winners, the biggest effect that I have found so far, just I'm scanning this list, is My Left Foot actually had a 40% increase having won.
Wow.
Having won. So it's not just the chatter around the nomination, but actually winning counts for a lot at the box office.
It's both.
It's both. Yep.
Right, and it depends on the release pattern. And, you know, another movie that it had a that nominations had a huge impact on this year was The Imitation Game, which just cleared $200 million, which is just, you know, I think American Sniper, it wasn't just the nominations. That
timing.
Had a lot of factors going into it. But Imitation Game, you can really say, you know, that being nominated, and it didn't really win that much, except for adapted screenplay. And so you can really pinpoint that made a huge difference for that little movie.
That's true. I mean, and if you scan through the list, it's really interesting how many small movies have been impacted in box office by being nominated for Best Picture. So I think expanding the category is also very – what the Academy did just a couple of years ago has been important.
But it seems to me, and you said spotty memory, that's my middle name. But I seem to have heard some criticism of the nominations this year, among a lot of other criticisms that I'm quite sure I heard. But criticism that the movies that the Oscars that are nominated for Oscars and that all that discussion is about are not sort of the mainstream movies that most people go to, that they're art films and small films that
sure.
that you know that may do better than expected, but not much is expected in terms of how many people they're actually going to reach.
Sure, but I would say so what? I mean, you know, we have rewards for hugely popular movies. They're called box office, for one thing, and they're called the People's Choice. And I think to a certain degree, the Golden Globes, you know, might, since they have so many more categories, that they have more room, perhaps, for those big popular hits. But frankly, I don't see a problem with that. I mean, the Academy is the Academy. It's a relatively small group of film professionals. It's no surprise to me, and it's not inappropriate to me, that they would want to make some, you know, choices that are quirky or idiosyncratic or maybe not terribly popular. I don't see any contradiction or problem with that whatsoever.
And I think it's actually sort of a perfect expression of this art form in America, because I think it does and always has combined art and commerce. And you talk to people in Hollywood who are totally involved in the business of it, the churn every day of the business, and they often have passion about a Jean Renoir film or something that has no box office play at all, but that doesn't mean they don't care about it. And it doesn't mean that doesn't somehow inform all the business churn that they go through. And that is part of movie making.
That's Jed Dietz here on Maryland Morning 88.1. I'm Sheila Kasten. With us by phone is Anne Hornaday, film critic of The Washington Post. Jed is the director of the Maryland Film Festival. Let's talk about some movies of this year. Leviathan, directed by Andre, I'm going to mispronounce this, Zyugintsev? Somebody who knows...
No, I don't know. It's a good
well, you're I think. Zyugintsev.
At any rate, Leviathan, which is a Russian tragedy. What should we know about that?
Well, it was nominated for Best Foreign Film, and it's an extraordinary movie on many levels. It really shows a small town... very northern Russia up near Murmansk, the corruption in this town. And the corruption is petty but forceful. The film is beautifully shot in a sort of unbelievably bleak landscape. And the acting is extraordinary. And I hadn't heard – I mean, I couldn't pronounce the director's name because I'd never heard of him before. And that's true of most of the cast. It's been hugely controversial inside Russia, banned in many places because it's seen as an attack on Putin and – et cetera, et cetera. And I think it is a deep cultural statement, also fascinating drama about what's going on in Russia post-Soviet Union.
And you said Leviathan is an indictment but also an elegy, a film set among the monumental ruins of a culture.
Oh, I said,
yes.
And I agree with me. It is. It's just a magnificent film. It's. I can't say enough about it. And as Jed said, it's just exquisitely, exquisitely shot. It's visually one of those movies that you really need to see on a big screen. Mm-hmm. I mean, you would be robbing yourself if you don't. And the way that Zyugintsev kind of threads this story out and unspools it, you're never sure where it's going to go. I don't want to give one little thing away about where it finally does go, because it becomes such an all-encompassing thing that it sort of takes your breath away, but it's all done within this this very small, almost like Chekhov-like story of a man and his family and his home.
So tell us a little bit about where it starts. You don't have to tell us where it goes.
Right. But it has to do with a guy who lives in this tiny little town where the big industry is a fish processing plant where his wife works, and he fixes cars, and he is involved in a land dispute with the powers that be in the town, the town bureaucracy involving the mayor and other administrators, and so it immediately plunges us into his court fights. And just the bureaucracy and the verbiage and the endless red tape and the lines and the waiting and you have to go here and there. I mean, you're immediately kind of intimately caught up with all of his, I said Chekhov, it's also Kafka-esque in terms of just how labyrinthine everything is. But then the story widens and more characters are introduced and more sort of extenuating factors are introduced. And there I shall leave you, because it's just mesmerizing. And like Jed said, the acting is impeccable. It just takes you right by the throat and just does not let you go. It's beautiful.
And I just want to reinforce seeing this on the big screen. I saw it on the big screen at the Charles, and it's so beautiful looking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we will leave it there and move on to Maps to the Stars. Why do we want to talk about that?
Well, Oscar winner Julianne Moore is the star. This is a film that Bruce Wagner wrote, David Cronenberg directed. It's been in the works in Hollywood for many years, 10, 12 years, with various directors. And it's another sort of attack on the culture of Hollywood business. But this one, I think, is so specific. Formed around an actress at a certain time in her life who was struggling with all the issues that come with that. And Julianne Moore's performance, especially, I mean, I think she well-deserved Oscar for Still Alice. This is another one, a completely different character, and another place where she just threw herself completely into this role. And it's just awesome to see her do this.
And?
I agree. I think she's the best thing in the movie. I'm not crazy about the movie. I think it's actually, Wagner wrote it. I think it was actually as many as 20 years ago. Oh. And it feels sort of dated to me. And it also feels pretty facile in terms of just pot shots at Hollywood excesses and superficiality and cynicism. And I feel like we've seen that before and we've probably seen it done better. But I agree with Jed about Moore's performance. She plays this an actress, you know, facing obsolescence, trying to stay relevant and dealing with some psychological issues having to do with her mother, who was also an actress. And it is an absolutely bravura performance. I mean, it's just stunning. So for that alone, I think it's probably worth seeing.
And you wrote a column just before the Oscar presentations headlined, "After 100 Years, We Still Don't Know How to Actually Watch a Movie." What is it we don't know?
Yeah. Well, you know, and by we, I mean, it wasn't so much the general audience that I was talking about. It was written at the end of that Oscar campaign season, which seemed, you know, it seems like every year we get more caught up with fact-checking movies, especially reality-based and history-based movies, which often do end up being nominated for Oscars. So it's kind of it's kind of a convergence of those two things. But I do think, you know, I think that's an interesting conversation to have. I'm not saying we shouldn't. And I think this year, especially Selma was put under the microscope for the deviations that it made from historical record. And again, I thought those were really interesting conversations, but I do think that at some point they do tend to obscure the fact that we are talking about an art form that has, that has certain formal conventions that either work or don't, but I think films deserve to be judged on those merits, and that historical fiction is fiction, and it's dramatized history, and we focus on the history without really taking into account the virtuosity of the drama. So I felt like, you know, even though those were interesting conversations to have, I wanted to kind of remind readers of the fact that let's bring it back to the art form, which, with luck, the Oscars will do, and that's what which we were talking about earlier. You know, that's what the Academy is trying to reward, And I was linking it, the 100 years piece was linking it to The Birth of a Nation, which came out 100 years ago, almost to the day in February, which itself, you know, contributed so much to the art form of filmmaking, while, of course, being very rightfully criticized for the rank distortions of history that it perpetuated.
Jed, last word.
I agree with all that. And I think just specifically about Selma, I think you can say how you feel about the portrayal of Lyndon Johnson, which was sort of the center of the controversy. And I would argue that there could have been heightened drama if they had portrayed him more accurately, actually, with the relationship with King. The two of them could have been even more fascinating than it was in the movie. But I think what Anne's point is, and I agree with this very strongly, that we have to remember it took 50 years to get that film made from the historic event, and the dramatic power of the film, whatever you want to say about it and how you would make it better or suggest and stuff, I think that is a huge addition to our culture, to see that event, those series of events recreated in movie. And why it's so powerful just being done as a movie, I don't know, but it is.
Got to leave it there. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anne.
Anne Hornaday, film critic for The Washington Post. Jed Dietz, director of the Maryland Film Festival. We've got more information on our website, wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Sheila Cass. There's more ahead on Maryland Morning. Stay with us on 88.1.